This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're going to be spending most of this hour talking with Beth Lissick about her book, Helping Me, Help Myself, One Skeptic, 10 Self-Help Gurus, and a Year on the Brink of the Comfort Zone. We're having some technical difficulties arranging the connection with her at one of our member stations on the West Coast. Instead, we will begin with the segment which we had planned to begin with last. All this week, we're looking ahead to people, trends, and events that will be huge in 2008. Yesterday, we talked about music and the music business with Bob Boylan. Tomorrow, movies with Murray Horowitz. Today, who or what is the next big thing in baseball? Will we focus on the field and celebrate Boston dynasties in football and baseball? Or will the big events again be off the field in congressional hearing rooms, federal courthouses, and police blotters? And will the small market Minnesota Twins trade away just about the best pitcher in the game? What's the next big thing in baseball? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Our baseball pal Alan Schwartz joins us from, I think, a cab in New York City. Alan is a reporter for the New York Times. His latest book is Once Upon a Game, Baseball's Greatest Memories. And Happy New Year, Alan.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Neil.
And the next big things I guess we know about are the repercussions from the release of the Mitchell Report on steroids.
Well, you know, I wonder if the big thing has already happened. I mean, the report is the big thing. Now the question becomes whether the commissioner, Bud Selig, has any interest in pursuing penalties against any of the players who were accused in the report. Remember, they were only accusations made by people who presumably have some knowledge about this situation, but they were merely accusations by these men, and I think that Major League Baseball will have an extraordinarily difficult time giving out any punishment based on that. The union will stall that instantly, and that's why you saw Senator Mitchell, when he gave the report a couple of Thursdays ago, basically pleading Bud Selig to not try to levy any penalties.
Yet Roger Clemens, arguing his reputation, he, of course, the most prominent new player to be named in Senator Mitchell's report, saying his reputation has been sullied, is launching a counterattack. He's bound to appear this Sunday on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, and it's going to be very widely watched, I'm sure. But let's face it, no matter what happens, anything that any of these people say without the threat of perjury, it's very difficult to take overly seriously. And I'm not saying anything about what I expect Roger to say, but Brian McNamee, his former trainer, who made the accusations in the Mitchell report that he injected Clemens with steroids and whatnot. These accusations and responses are all made not under oath. And I think that it's very difficult to really know who's telling the truth, what portion of what they're telling is the truth, what portion is not. Let's face it, not everything is both ways. So I think that, it's very hard for me to take any of it very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Roger Clemens, though, may be put under oath if he testifies before the House committee, which is going to be having hearings on this in the middle of January.
I agree, and it would be fascinating to watch him accept that arrangement. I'd love to see that, because then you really can take what he and anybody else, it's not just because he's the accused here, I'd love to see Brian McNamee testify as well. Everybody involved, I'd love to see testify under threat of perjury. I mean, that's what they're going to watch Barry Bonds apparently, go to trial and possibly get caught lying. And that's a wonderful disincentive to lie under oath in these hearings.
We're talking with Alan Schwartz of the New York Times. If you'd like to join us in our conversation about the next big thing in baseball, 800-989-8255. And Jack is on the line from Tallahassee in Florida.
Yes, thank you. And I was one of the 90,000-plus at the induction of Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken. I'm a lifelong Oriole fan. And my next big thing in baseball is a year-long boycott. And let me tell you why, guys. It couldn't get any better than the pinnacle of those two absolutely sterling professionals, both in personal and on the field. And I just need a break. I think this steroid and other kinds of scandals and the limitless trading, I mean, these were two guys that played an entire career for one team. I just need a break. I need a distance. And, you know, at 56, I just think that after 50-plus years of being a fan, I'm going to take the year off. That's my position, and I'm sticking to it.
Alan, is a boycott of baseball going to be, certainly it's going to be watched for. Whether it happens or not, who knows?
It will never happen. This fellow's feelings to the contrary, and he's certainly entitled to his own individual approach. But there won't be nearly enough people who feel that way. And I feel this man's frustration. I mean, certainly I'm as mortified as about what has happened in baseball as anybody. But I do feel as if, frankly, the press has made more of it than I believe fans in general care to hear. And, you know, there was all sorts of talk after the 94-95 strike about fans boycotting, and it didn't happen because the game, the sport, the spectacle, and the fact that a majority of players are honest.
Well, the attendance certainly did go down in 1995 after the strike of 1994, and indeed, one of the reasons often given for the reason the sport looked the other way and the great baseball home run chase of 1998 was, well, they're trying to get fans back in the park, and everybody digs the long ball.
Well, I think that's part of it, too. I think an awful lot of this, though, has come down to the dynamic that existed between Major League Baseball and the Players Association in the late 90s. Major League Baseball couldn't bend at the waist without the union's approval. And everyone knew there was no chance that the union was going to accept any kind of serious drug testing in that time. The union was too powerful at that time. And so Major League Baseball looked the other way in part, I believe, because the union had such power, there's no point in even trying. Now, they lost the public relations war because of that stance, but I don't think a lot would have evolved a whole lot differently.
Jack, thanks very much for the call. I guess we're not going to see you at the ballpark this year.
See you. Bye.
So long. Alan, what about on the field? There were so few significant free agents available this offseason that trades have come back into vogue. And I guess the unconsummated deal everybody's interested in is Johan Santana, the superb left-handed pitcher of the Minnesota Twins, to the Yankees, to the Red Sox, or the Mets, or maybe the Angels.
Yeah, I mean, no one knows what's going to happen to him right now. And the Twins, even though their general manager has changed, Terry Ryan, their longtime boss, has moved on, Bill Smith has replaced him, the Twins have proven that they're more than happy to keep a star player through the end of the year and lose him to free agency. Example A being Torrey Hunter, their outstanding center fielder, who moved on recently from the Twins. So they might very well keep Santana. And I think it's important in some ways that they do because they, you want to make sure you get the proper trade value. A lot of these teams end up having to dump their players for almost nothing. And I think the Twins are saying, look, you want Santana, you're going to have to pay us. And it's important to say no to trades before you say yes.
The team that did say yes to a huge trade this offseason was the Florida Marlins, and all of a sudden the Detroit Tigers look very formidable in the American League.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable trade, wasn't it? Dontrell Willis, the incredibly charismatic and talented, although there are some questions as to how much of that talent truly remains. He had a poor year last year. But Dontrell Willis is the new lefty for that rotation, outstanding young rotation, most of it. And, the key part of that trade was the third baseman, Miguel Cabrera, outstanding young slugger, filling in now in the one hole in the Tigers lineup, and there weren't many. Yes, the Tigers look outstanding, particularly with the Twins going downhill. It's really going to be an exciting year watching the Indians and the Tigers duke it out.
And the phrase we heard so often in the past few years in terms of baseball was Moneyball. And one of its precepts was that, you know, you can take almost anybody and make them into a reliever. Certainly there's no worse odds for bringing up a kid from your minor league system than spending, $7 million on somebody who had a good year last year, because relievers traditionally never have two good years in a row. A lot of teams seem to be taking that to heart.
Well, I've always been of that mind, frankly, that a closer isn't really a position on the field. It's a role that evolved because managers didn't like being second-guessed a whole lot. And when Tony La Russa showed that Dennis Eckersley could get three outs every single time for the A's in the late 80s and 90s, it evolved to the point where it made managers' jobs easier. But the thing is that you can throw just about, not anybody, of course. I mean, you need to have some talent, but there are a lot of candidates who can close games on most teams. Therefore, why put your money for one of them specifically when there's no real need to do that? Now, the Yankees, of course, have always had the outstanding Mariano Rivera during this entire period. But a lot of teams are saying, look, why overspend for a closer? We can get a lot more bang for our buck elsewhere. And it's just a smart way to allocate resources, which even in a $6 billion industry are limited.
And in an industry, if we're going to call it that, where pitching is a premium, we're seeing the rise of, it just seems to me, a huge number of immensely talented young pitchers.
Oh, sure. It's always been cyclical in baseball. I mean, certainly in the late 90s and early 2000s, as we were watching home runs, you know, shoot through the roof, and certainly we're learning now a little bit that some performance-enhancing drugs undoubtedly had something to do with that. Let's not forget, though, that one of the reasons there were no young pitchers back then also was, frankly, the fact that the ballparks were getting a lot smaller and the strike zone was much smaller from 95 to 2005. Also, people forget that. Everything in baseball comes down to the strike zone. And that's why Sandy Alderson's work with Major League Baseball was so important before he moved on to the Padres. He was the guy who told the umpires to start calling the proper strike zone. And that's one of the reasons I believe that we're seeing more young pitchers succeed these days, because they don't have to throw the ball into a rectangle the size of a bread box anymore.
So maybe the next big thing for 2008 is the next big thing for 2006, Questech.
Well, I'm not sure if it was Questech as much. I mean, Questech was a means of Questech being, of course, the computerized ball and strike call monitoring system that baseball uses to make sure that the umpires aren't wretched. And, you know, I think all that was just a way of quantifying, hey, look, guys, you know, you're really missing the outside corner here. Stop doing that. You know, if it's a strike, it's a strike. And I know you guys like having your personal strike zones, but you got to follow the rule book. It was a way of making it a little more objective. And I think once the umpires grew more comfortable with how that system was going to be administered, they accepted that, okay, we see what this is about, and we're less opposed to it than we were.
Alan Schwartz, accompanied by, I think, a tugboat and a small child. Thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Neil, anytime.
Alan Schwartz writes for the New York Times. His latest book, Once Upon a Game, Baseball's Greatest Memories, with us from a taxi cab in New York City. We'll be talking with Beth Lissick about her book, Helping Me Help Myself. When we come back, stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.